Did I break this? I haven't been here long enough to break it. the screen behind me references our topic for this morning. We're at the start of a new quarter, and so we're at the start of a new study. We'll be studying the book of Job. I won't be the one studying it with you for the most part. I'm here today because our teacher, Josh, is, I think, at a gospel meeting. So he's not able to be with us this morning, but you get me instead. And so we're just going to go through a general introduction of Job, talk about some of the main themes. We're going to try to learn from it. We have approximately 40, 45 minutes to do that. I promise I don't have 45 minutes of material prepared. And so it'll be a discussion. I'll be more than happy to entertain your questions or thoughts or comments. Every question that we'll have, I'll open up to you. And that's how we'll kind of proceed this morning, just kind of having a general introduction to Job. So, question one on your books, and again, we won't open up much of Job today. I think the next lesson, if you grab next week's question sheets on Job 1 and 2, today is just more of a general introduction to it, and so the questions are kind of focused in that way. So this question, one of the most common reasons some offer for their unbelief is, a good God would not allow good people to suffer. The first thing that you probably know about Job when you think about it is that it's about the suffering of Job, and it's about the things that he endures, and so suffering's kind of a big part of the book. So with that in mind, how do you think a study of this book, the book of Job, will better help us respond to this common criticism? How do we answer that criticism, and how might we, the book of Job help us with that? Yeah, and we're going to read some of those verses a little bit later in the study about, what reasons the Bible gives for those things, what reasons the Bible might give to as an insight for suffering. We know exactly why Job had to suffer in this book, and we may read part of that this morning in Job 1 that kind of tells us what actually happened to Job. Job spends a lot of time wondering, and his friends spend a lot of time debating what happened to him. It helps give us insight on, what happens when you... when you're in that situation. Yeah.
Also, in the long run, God's grace was there for Job. And perseverance and stick-to-itiveness with your love for God will reward you in the long run.
The other thing, God never promised us we were not going to get through this world without trials and tribulations and pain and suffering and death. We see example of that with Job. He's a great example, but we've never been promised that, so it's something we're going to have to deal with in this life.
I'll notice you in just a second. I think both of those are right? Like, we have this perspective that we expect, maybe the world to give us everything we need, right? And I like to think of from the perspective of God, right? Like, everything that we have, he had to intentionally make for us. Right, like the world that we have, he had to create that in the plant life and the animals that we eat from, right? And if he hadn't created the air, then we wouldn't have anything to breathe, right? And people, these parts that are suffering, right, or, usually we're suffering out of maybe there's not enough or there wasn't the right condition. And, God doesn't promise us that he's going to create every little thing to make our lives perfect and easy, right? And that's not the case for God, right? God's life isn't without... some form of suffering too, right? We know that God is pained by us falling away and us sinning, and we have a choice to do that. I don't know why we expect God to endure our sin, but we don't expect to endure anything ourselves. Had a comment back here in the left.
Oh yes, patience with what God does and allows to happen is a mark of a Christian if they can maintain their belief. For every day, I've had cancer twice, and I'm still here. So, you may have medical problems, or you may have other problems that you have to cope with it. And it depends on you what you decide to do with your situation.
Yeah, I talked Wednesday night about 1 Peter 1, and it's not a verse that we plan to read here, but that's kind of the theme of 1 Peter 1. There are going to be things that you have to endure, and trials, and those things in part show the genuineness of your faith. It would be really hard to discern people who are genuine believers from people who are just believing because of peer pressure, or circumstance, or family, right? Like the thing that, you know, helps separate that, one of the really easy indicators of Christians or non-Christians are how they respond to those trials and how they persevere, and that's a helpful thing for us. Yeah, not to skip to some of the questions later in this about the general plot of Job, but there's some confusion there. There's some wondering about why is this happening? And we have that in our lives too, right? When a bad thing is happening, there's some thought on our part of, is this something I did that I can stop doing or that I can change? You know, is it something in my diet or my routine, or did I take the wrong way into work this morning? We have some, you know, some thoughts about, you know, what can we change? And then there's some thoughts about, is this just chance and circumstance? Is it hereditary? Is it something that I couldn't have stopped? There's wondering in our life about why things happen to us. And we see Job go through that, and it is helpful to see that parallel in a biblically inspired story, right, about the things that, you know, Christians have to go through and wonder about, and even through that, right, there's a way to do it and a way to glorify God, and it's a helpful thing.
Yeah, one thing too is that you read Job and the suffering that Job went through. So we all have human suffering, but it also tells us about God and His justice, because if you remain faithful to Him as Job did, then we see the justice of what the outcome was, and how God will still take care of you.
Yeah, and not to keep re-preaching my invitation from Wednesday night, but that's the conclusion of 1 Peter 1. He says, you know, if you do these things and you remain faithful, then you'll receive the end of your faith, your salvation. And Job's a good place to find that too. Job, you know, eventually received the end of his faith and the end of his obedience and all those things. And I think there are, you know, times as Christians where we don't see that and where we may get discouraged and think, you know, it would be easy to give up right now, or the end's never going to come, or it doesn't benefit me to keep living, you know, in this way. There are a lot of easier ways I could do it. And we may forget that, you know, that there will be a reward for those things, or that there's a reason to do it the right way. So for question two, it's going to get into the setting, some general notes about this. Let's just read, if someone would volunteer to read the first 5 verses of Job 1 for me. Yes, sir.
His name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, one who feared God and turned away from evil. There were born to him 7 sons and 3 daughters. Possessed 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and very many servants. So that this man was the greatest of all the people in the East. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day. They would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And when the days of the feast had run their course, Job would send and consecrate them, and he would rise early in the morning, offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my children have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did continually.
Yeah, I love the first 5 verses of Job here. You know, it's sometimes in the Bible we get a glimpse into what everyday life looks like for biblical characters. And my favorite thing about the opening of Job here is just that we get a glimpse into Job's life, right? We're told pretty much what an average, you know, what a day might look like for Job and his family. We're told about the feasting that they do and about the wealth that they have and the situation that their family's in. We get a little bit of information about the setting of Job's life and what it looks like. So just with that in mind, we'll answer 3 questions here about the context of Job. And what we might glean from that context about the next part of the book and about the things that are going to happen. But just to answer those questions, where was Job living? Uz. Has anyone ever been to Uz? I have not. You know, you couldn't, I sure couldn't point to Uz on a map until I was preparing for this a little bit and reading about where Uz was. Where is Uz?
I read it was part of Moab.
It's near that area. I think we get this idea that, most of the Old Testament takes place in Israel or in, maybe in Egypt and coming out of Israel. It takes place in that general area, right? This was actually, Job was an Arab man. He lived in northern Arabia. That's where Uz is. What modern country occupies Arabia today? I thought about this. Saudi Arabia has Arabia in the name. I had to think about that. I actually Googled the question. I'm like, where is Arabia? And then I saw Saudi Arabia, and I felt not that good about my intelligence. But yeah, so he was an Arabian man. He lived in the very northern part of Arabia. Saudi Arabia actually doesn't occupy all of Arabia today. So today that area that he lived in, the district of Uz, would probably be northern Saudi Arabia, maybe the southern part of the nation of Israel today, and probably a little bit of Jordan. That general area was the district of Uz. Pretty much all of the characters of this book come from somewhere in that general area. His friends that come in come from nearby areas. We're told in a few verses about the things that plague his household. One of the tribes that attacked them, or one of the nations that attacked them, was from a nearby mountainous area. But yeah, that's the general setting. We're a little bit south of the normal Israeli setting, but we're still generally in the Middle East. We're in northern Arabia. During what time period would most place this book? And why? When do we think about this book taking place?
Probably roughly between 1,000 to 2,000 years BC, roughly in that area.
Yeah, so I think an approximation of this would be about 2,000 BC. Some people place it before the time of Moses, and some people place it after. I'd say that before Moses is probably a little bit more popular, because we see Job and his family living in kind of a very patriarchal way. And we see, we see a very patriarchal relationship with Job here that is a little bit less common after the time of Moses. So a lot of people place it even before the time of Moses, yeah.
Okay, well, you look at Job did. He got up and he offered sacrifices because of his children and so forth. So he was the priest during the patriarchic age, how God dealt with at that time, so by his actions would put him in a patriarchal age of offering sacrifices and so forth.
Yeah, I'd say that it's, we don't know for, it's not told to us necessarily what time that Job lived in, but because of a lot of evidences like that and just the way that we see Job interacting with God, the way we see him living his life, it won't be super prominent for our story, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but yeah, I mean, we can generally place Job sometime well before the time of Christ, probably by, 1,000 years, 2,000 years before the time of Christ, and in an age where, he's able to have this very intimate relationship with God. Yeah.
We have to remember God using Job against the devil here, just like the devil trying to use Christ to do things for him, he would give him so much things. So it's a little something beyond our quite understanding why God did that. After we've been a Christian for several years, we know why he did that.
Yeah, and that's important too, right? We see that even in the book of Job, right, like the devil is continuing to kind of have this conversation with God in a way that, I don't think a lot of us would think is still actively going on today. We don't at least imagine that to be going on today, right? Like, we don't, maybe we imagine the devil in the way that he's described roaming as a lion, but not necessarily even just talking to God and singling people, like, can I go pick on this one? But so that's another thing that might help us date it, the idea that, it's kind of early in the history of the world comparatively, right, where he's able to talk and have this relationship with God where he's asking about, the servants on the earth, and that relationship is still forming. And question three here, does the book of Job ever mention an author? No. No, I heard that answer. No, the book of Job doesn't tell you it was written by Thomas Amaker or anyone else, right? There's no, it's not signed by anyone. There have been some theories about who wrote the book of Job. The most popular one's probably Moses. But we can kind of see that it conforms to a lot of the narrative styles of the Old Testament, and when, you know, it has a lot of the opening and setting and things that are familiar to us about the Bible writing style. But that doesn't necessarily indicate to us who wrote it. And the next question will, you know, kind of ask us why we're asking that question. But in general, no, we don't have a sure answer about who wrote it. There's a list of people, you know, theorized authors. I won't go through that list, but just in general, we don't know. Is the importance of this work the date of composition or its author, or is the importance of the work its message? Yeah, I'm hearing the message. And, you know, I think that there are some, you know, the commentary that I would add to that question is there are some biblical books where it's really important for us to be able to nail down the when and the where of why it happened. The book of Acts. Right? We need to have a general idea. Like, that's a history book for us about the church. We need to have a general idea of when that took place. We need to know that the people were all real people. We need to be able to go back and point to this, you know, happened here and then. We need to be able to show that the things that the Bible is telling us about the formation of the church or about Christ's death in Matthew, right? We need to be able to go back to those things that are really historical for us, that are foundational historical documents for our belief. And we need to be able to go back and point, this is where that happened. Or, you know, the book of Exodus or Genesis, right? It's important for us because those are foundational books about the when and the where of how the, you know, world came to be and how the church came to be, that we have concrete answers for, you know, who wrote this and how do we know it's true, or when was it written? So how do we know that it was, you know, or about the prophecies? When was it written so we know that it was actually written before the prophecies actually happened? So it's important for us about some of those things. But Job isn't that kind of book. The list of characters in Job is pretty limited. There aren't a ton of people included in this. It's a small set of people. And they don't do anything that, you know, I mean, a lot of what they do is written so we're able to learn from Job's account. Not necessarily because Job is directly impacting us today the way that, you know, Peter's Sermon on the Mount is in the formation of the church. You're not gonna, when you're talking to people who aren't, you know, members of the church, they're not gonna come and ask you, well, show me exactly where, you know, Job's house was. The purpose of Job isn't really about that necessarily. It's about the message that Job is trying to send, and that's the part that we should probably be trying to glean. What are some of the main themes and lessons from the book of Job?
We hear a lot about patience throughout the book of Job, but then in one, you see that it says one who feared God and shunned evil, and then as you go through that verse, you also see his daily routine, the discipline that he invokes. So I think that that's the other lesson that we can take outside of patience, is that there's a lot of discipline at play in Job's life. And then skipping ahead to 22, in all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. So, I mean, it shows that he knows who the creator of evil is and knows that he's going to charge the right person for that.
Yeah, I think those are fair things to glean from that. Other thoughts about the main themes or lessons? Yeah, Robert?
I think something that we should remember is that the valley, we often make references to, you know, the valley when we're going through really difficult times in our life. We do well to remember that the valley is not a place where we're supposed to take, make our permanent home, in a sense. You know, the valley can certainly feel as if it's, you know, that it's never going to end. The sufferings are never going to stop. But we also see, when it's all said and done, Job does overcome his suffering and he does stay faithful. We can do the same. There are still many good things in life we can look forward to and in for eternal life as well. But we just do well to remember that our suffering, it really is temporary.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing to note, right? Job isn't just a book about what to do during the trial. It's also a book about, you know, moving on from that trial and getting to the next chapter of your life. Yeah.
No matter what, they don't give up. Job argued with God and had talks, and was, but he never gave up on his faith. He always knew God was there and would take care of him.
Yes, sir.
It kind of puts the test to why do I believe what I believe? Because if you're not, Job had to be completely firm and founded in exactly why. Well, first off, God said, he threw down the gauntlet and said, Satan, here, take Job. This guy will prove to you that there's God here. And this guy will stand up for what we believe. And he won. Okay? We're capable of doing that too. Except in order to do that, it's not an easy task. Because in order for that to happen, you have to be completely committed to those principles to allow you to be and act that way. And understand that it's God and not the things about you and things about this world that make you happy, the things that make you who you are, it's God and the reward in the end.
Yeah, that's an important comment. Job withstood this in large part because he had a very high intestinal fortitude. Right, he had a very high tolerance for things that could happen that, you know, he could endure and still maintain a very consistent idea of his principles. Right, the book to me is as much about really consistent application of his principles and about his worldview and the way he imagined, you know, the world, way he saw God or the way he saw justice. Right, he had this very consistent view of, you know, my faith on God isn't necessarily just based on the blessing that God gives me. My belief in God isn't based on, you know, X, Y, or Z, right? My belief in God is based on the fact that I can prove that God exists. Right? He knows that God exists, and because he has this really, like, permanent and deep, like, knowledge that God exists and faith in that, right? Like, that faith doesn't, or, and also this idea that he knows that God is good, right? He's seen the goodness of God. He knows that for sure. So he isn't really being pushed off of that essential premise that he's able to make define his life, right? He's able to endure these things without being pushed off of that. He's able to remain really consistent. I think that that's another thing that, you know, may trouble some people is that when you get a lot of pushback, right, it may challenge you being really consistent in what you believe and how you act on the things that you believe, right? Like, you know, if I may believe that stealing is wrong, but if you put me in a situation where I was, you know, in deep need and where there was a very easy chance to steal and get away with it, right? We know that a lot of people in the world, you know, have fallen into that temptation, right? But Job, despite the fact that he has many of those temptations in you know, this book, he's able to remain really consistent about his values and his virtues. I'll tell you that, you know, I wasn't raised as a Christian. And when I joined the church, one of the things that caused, you know, that caused me to have this deep belief in God and to act on that belief was this idea that, you know, my life wouldn't be possible without God because of all the things that I'd been blessed with and about just the uncanny fortune that I had. I realized that there was a God in play in my life. Right? And if that was my only reason for believing God, it would be really hard for me to endure a time like Job did. Right? Because then all of those things that I would build my faith on would be pushed away by time and chance or by these things happening. And so, yeah, it's a good idea that we need to be, you know, really consistent, really deep in our faith. That way we have values that withstand. Yeah.
When I was 24, my parents passed away within 12 days of each other. And I was a Christian at the time, but I was very young and I felt very inexperienced, very unknowledgeable. I was a Christian for probably about 3 years. And when that happened, I thought I had done something wrong. You know, I wasn't the right Christian. I didn't do things the way God wanted me to do it. And why is this happening to me? You know, I'm being cursed, you know, for my behavior. And I actually had people in the church, my friends, say to me, you must have done something. And I think that, you know, I got upset at the time, and I felt really bad about myself, but I also, due to him, came up and said, you know, it's not anything I did. I read it. Look at Job. You know what I mean? His friend said the same thing to him. And he was able to go on and be the kind of Christian he knew to be. And so I have learned so much from Job, and I have kept my faith, and I have understood that this is all just a journey that God wanted me to go through. And my faith was tested time and time again. And I feel like I have endured that. And so I think, yes, Job has changed my life.
Yeah, that's a perfect answer to, you know, the last part of this question about how the book can help us. It, you know, the biggest way is that we're going to go through times of trial in our life where it may be really easy to look at Job's scenario and say, I'm enduring a lot of the things that Job did. And he really did endure the gamut. And it does give us a little bit of understanding about why suffering happens and how we can endure. And he's just a really good case study for a lot of those things. Okay, we have this nice chart, and we're going to get back to this in a little bit about the different sections of Job, and just about the different areas here. I think this slide may be out of order. I think it's on the second page of your book, after question four, but we will get back to this on the second page here when we're talking about just the structure and layout of Job. So question four is again referencing suffering and the suffering that we know that happens. Again, we're not made to wonder about why the suffering actually happened to Job. We're told exactly what happened that led Job to suffer in the first chapter of Job. But, you know, we may not have that necessarily same situation that Job did that led to our suffering on the earth. But we are told a lot of stuff about suffering and about why it happens. So let's read a handful of these verses. If someone wants to get Hebrews 9:27, if someone wants to get Ecclesiastes 9:11, if someone wants to get 1 Peter 4:15, if someone wants to get James 1 verse 2 through 4, if someone wants to get Hebrews 12, 4 through 11, and we'll stop in the last verse here in Matthew, and I'll get that one. I'll get Matthew 24, 9. All right, so whoever has Hebrews 9:27, thank you.
And as it is appointed for men to die once, but after this, the judgment.
So what do we learn from that verse about suffering or about death? That we're appointed to die. Right, that death is a guarantee, that sometimes when that suffering is death, it can be because it was appointed, right? We're very aware of the fact that death is appointed to us, and we don't have to have a lot of curiosity about why death happened. It's because we're appointed to die once. Ecclesiastes 9:11. Yeah, either one of y'all. Robert.
I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to men of understanding, nor favor of men of skill. Time and chance happen to them all.
What do we learn about suffering from that verse? Time and chance are going to happen. They're givens. They happen to everyone. You think about the enormousness of the universe. That's not a word, I promise. But you think about how large the universe are and how many different moving pieces there are. Right, you're bound to get stuck in traffic once in your life. You're bound to, you know, stub your toe given how many objects there are in your house. Time and chance are going to happen to people on the earth, right? That's you know that sometimes that you're just going to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. 1 Peter 4:15.
But let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, and an evildoer, as a busybody in other people's matters.
Will you go ahead and read the 16th verse as well? The verse right after that?
Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter.
Thank you. And again, that tells us, is suffering going to happen to the murderers and the thieves and those people? Yes. Right? That verse tells us, you know, please don't suffer as one of those people. Right, if you're going to suffer, the next verse says, if you suffer as a Christian, right, that's a glory to you. That's an honor. And so that, you know, based on that, we know that, you know, it's not necessarily because it's going to happen because you're a murderer or a robber or a thief, right? It also happens to Christians, and it says, you know, let them suffer as Christians. Okay, James 1, 2 through 4. Thank you, Seth. Oh, I'm sorry, Seth. you get Matthew 24. We're coming back to you.
Knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And
let through us have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing.
There we go, right? You persevere through these things, and that gives you endurance, right? It instills virtue in you. I always think of that quote from Holes, you know, we're digging holes to build character. But, I mean, that's, you know, in some cases, the trials of our life may be to prepare us for something or to give us that endurance or to do these things, right? And so it says, you know, don't be so sad that you're enduring those things, right? It can be a virtue to you and build a benefit. That was the James verse, right? Hebrews 12, 4 through 11.
You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there from a father who is not chastened? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the fathers of spirits and live? For they indeed, for a few days, chastened us as seemed best to them. But he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening seemed to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it.
You know, and another example from another source that we haven't read about yet, the chastening of the Lord. That was the case for David, right? Like, he had committed this sin very prominently. There were going to be consequences of that. He was told bluntly, the Lord is doing this because you sinned. There are going to be consequences to that. And sometimes in our life, that's just the truth, right? We do something, we sin against God, and there are going to be consequences of that. Sometimes those consequences are worldly, right? If you rob a bank, you're going to jail. But we shouldn't always assume that it's not because of a chastening or because we've sinned, right? When you sin, you can frequently expect there are going to be consequences for that sin that God has put into the world, right? When I lie, I shouldn't be surprised when someone catches my lie. And last but not least here, Matthew 24.
Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and put you to death, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake.
And I'm glad I ended on that verse, and there's a reason that I ended on that one, right? That's the one that is pretty much a given when you're a Christian. When Jesus was on this earth, his message was not widely accepted. There were many other people who had their worldly religions, right? Or Jews who had a power system set up in place. And the idea that we were going to switch to a servant-first kingdom under Christ, or the idea that Christ was going to be the head of that kingdom, was not a popular thought. And so Christ was not very clearly embraced when he was on the earth, and us as his servants shouldn't expect to be embraced and loved by everyone either. And some of the trial that we endure may be because we are Christians and we live in a world that doesn't always make things comfortable for Christians. That may be less true if you're in a country that is, a majority of Christians. But that's not always the case, right? There are people in this world who endure certainly because they are Christians. Get to one or two more here. In what specific area does 1 Peter 2:21 call us to be followers of Christ? If someone wants to read that verse in 1 Peter 2:21. My Bible's pretty much always bookmarked in 1 Peter 1. Does somebody have that verse in 1 Peter 2? We're told that we're called because Christ suffered for us, right? But what were we called to? Will you read the verse right before that?
For what credit is it if, when you sin and are suffering unjustly?
So when you're suffering unjustly, right, you endure that, and that's to your credit, the next verse says. To this you were called. You were called to endure things just like Christ did. Okay, I hear voices in the hallway. Hopefully that's a good introduction to where we are in Job, and I appreciate your comments. Thank you.